We continue now with the story of the murders of three civil rights workers in Mississippi in 1964, as remembered by commentator and former CBS News anchor Walter Cronkite.
CBS News correspondent Nelson Benton made a trip to the Mississippi town today, and here's his report on this civil rights visitor.
Benton reported the details and the names of the workers who would soon become familiar to the world.
Mount Zion Church burned under mysterious circumstances last week, and the three missing civil rights workers left Meridian Sunday to take a look at the ruins. It was somewhere in the vicinity of the church that James Cheney was arrested on a traffic violation by a sheriff's deputy. Cheney is a Negro. Cheney and his white companions, Mickey Schwerner and Andy Goodman, were taken to the Neshoba County Jail, where Cheney was booked on the traffic charge. The others held for investigation. They were released after Cheney paid a $20 fine.
What none of us knew then was how deeply the FBI already had flooded Mississippi and infiltrated local institutions. It was an anonymous telephone tip to FBI agents in Meridian that had led to the discovery of the car. But Hoover cautioned Johnson not to be too specific about the Bureau's presence in the area.
I wouldn't give the details of the number of agents that we've got. You said it was substantially augmented. I think that's entirely sufficient.
Meanwhile, in Washington, the parents of
20-year-old Andy Goodman, that's Mr. and Mrs. Robert Goodman of New York, and Mickey Schwerner's father, he's also from New York, saw President Johnson today. Mrs. Goodman had said earlier she was extremely frightened because, in her words, Mississippi is a strange land where anything could happen.
A strange land indeed. For the next month, while state police trolled remote swamps for bodies, undercover FBI agents quietly burrowed deeper into the local shadows. 44 days after the story broke, an informer who has never been identified came forward. The search for the bodies now focused on a farm near Philadelphia, Mississippi. Bulldozers moved in and began gouging chunks of earth from a dried-up dam on the land. On Tuesday evening, August 4th, Lyndon Johnson found himself in a rare confluence of historic timing. Two unrelated events were about to collide literally at the same hour. A minor incident 2 days before in the Tonkin Gulf off Vietnam had escalated to a major crisis by Tuesday. That night, as the president was planning the airstrikes that would take America full bore into the Vietnam War, he received this phone call from Deputy FBI Director Kartha DeLoach.
Mr. Hoover wanted me to call you, sir, immediately and tell you that the FBI has found three bodies 6 miles southwest of Philadelphia, Mississippi. A search party of agents turned up the bodies just about 15 minutes ago while they were digging in the woods and underbrush several hundred yards off Route 21 in that area. We have not identified them as yet as the three missing men, but we have every reason to believe that they are the three missing men.
When are you going to make an announcement?
Within 10 minutes, sir, if it's all right with you.
Okay, if you can hold it about 15 minutes, I think we'll notify these families.
All right, sir. Shall I wait till I...
I'll get right back to you.
Very good, sir.
Johnson immediately called an assistant, Lee White.
So call the families and tell them that there'll be an announcement in the next 10 or 15 minutes. We'll, as soon as we get proper identification, let them know further.
All right, I'll call all three of them right now. All right,
and tell them I ask you to.
I will, Mr. President.
4 months later, the FBI arrested 21 suspects, including the county sheriff and his deputy. But Mississippi never indicted or tried them. That was left to a federal grand jury acting under a conspiracy law passed during Reconstruction. The defendants were celebrated as local heroes for 3 years. In October of 1967, 7 of the 21 were convicted and sentenced to terms from 3 to 10 years. If the leniency of the punishment shocked the country, its severity angered Mississippians, proving how separate the two societies still were.
With Harry Reasoner substituting for Walter Cronkite.
Good evening. A federal jury in Meridian today voted the first convictions in Mississippi's post-Reconstruction history of white men in a major civil rights crime. The jury found 7 guilty of conspiring to violate the rights of 3 young men in 1964. Michael Schwerner, James Cheney, and Andrew Goodman. The jury also acquitted 8 defendants and could not reach a verdict for 3 others.
Those of us who reported civil rights stories then often felt uneasy with the protocols of objectivity. It seemed dishonest to pretend that a Ku Klux Klan leader had the civic or moral equivalence of Rosa Parks or Medgar Evers. But CBS management reminded us often that that was not our judgment to make. In retrospect, the summer of 64 was paradoxical and prophetic. The paradox was that 2 weeks after President Johnson signed the Civil Rights Bill, blacks suddenly rioted in northern cities. Harlem was first, and the prophet was to be Harlem Congressman Adam Clayton Powell, whose flamboyance often concealed his shrewdness. He warned that racial change would come in 2 phases, and that the South would be the easy one. There were other political signposts that summer. At the Democratic Convention in August, virtually the entire Southern leadership of the Senate and a third of its governors found they had previous commitments and did not attend. In Atlanta, Lester Maddox passed out axe handles and invoked the 10 Commandments as a political manifesto as he closed his fried chicken restaurant rather than accommodate black customers. The murders of Cheney, Schwerner, and Goodman in 1964 and the Selma March the following spring would be the last important rallying acts of civil rights activism before the country began turning its attention to Vietnam. But what Adam Clayton Powell foresaw and what Lester Maddox invoked would persist in ways few imagined. For NPR News, this is Walter Cronkite.
And to recap, testimony began today in the trial of the man who's accused of orchestrating that Klan attack that killed James Cheney, Andrew Goodman, and Michael Schwerner more than 40 years ago. The defendant, Edgar Ray Killen, is now 80 years old. He was removed from the courtroom to be treated for high blood pressure, and today's testimony was cut short. You can hear more of Walter Cronkite's essays at our website, npr.org.